You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Trying to make sense of the world?
You've got Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach.
Call our toll-free number now.
Headlines, culture, and real conversation.
And now, our feature presentation.
Here's Pete and Greg.
Welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba here on the Civic Media Network. My name is Greg Bach, coming to you live from Radio Park here in Racine. All the way across the state is Mr. Pete Schwabba in Marinette,
Hello.
Also known as Holiday Fun Christmas Place, USA. That's what we're trying to get. Yeah, totally trying to get that
you
working.
Know what, the next time I come through Kenosha, I'm going to put a big poster over your setup there. So you'd never forget Christmas City, USA.
Okay. All right. Cool. Holiday Christmas Fun Town, USA. That's fine. I got it. Got it. It's right there.
So
I wrote down. I wrote down a while ago. if you want to be part of the conversation, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on our live stream. We're currently streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. Still ahead, a great conversation with UCLA professor and musicologist. He is a best-selling author. He's professor of English and African-American studies. Adam Bradley, talking about pop music, talking about music in general, its validity as an art form, and the poetry there. In that will be coming up in a little bit. And then don't forget, we're here Monday through Friday, Pete. I'm not telling you that. I know you know that. I'm telling them, but you get it. Next Monday, we are talking to Dr. Keith Polson from UW-Madison, and he'll be talking to us about the bird flu that's been going. It's back in Wisconsin again. We thought it was gone. It's back. And then later in the show, in the second hour, we're talking to comedian Mary Mack, who might have the most Northern Wisconsin / Minnesota accent on earth. So that will be here for you next week. But now let's talk about the question of the night. Can we get a restatement?
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
What is a superstition you believe in? Go ahead, call in 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, call or text. Leave a comment on the live stream. We'd love to hear from you. What is a superstition that you believe in? We got some answers on the text line here. Let's see. Monica in Mount Horeb, listening in on WMDX, says, not a superstition, but I do not walk over sidewalk grates. Seen the movies too many times, they all float down there. Okay. That sounds like superstition to me, but I don't know. I guess
I never heard that one.
It's a reference to It.
You'll float too.
We all float down here. I don't know. I've never seen the movie. It's a scary movie, and the book is even scarier. Can't do it.
Okay, fair.
I haven't seen it either.
I just know the references.
Len in the 608 says, the superstition I want to believe in, seeing and picking up a penny outside on the ground will bring good luck. I forgot about that one.
Well, now you don't have to worry about a nickel because we're getting rid of the pennies. The pennies will be, I wonder when the pennies will be gone. Like, they not making them anymore. And when will someone say, all right, and we're not taking them anymore either. Turn in your pennies.
Well, now
I think they were only keeping the pennies around for loafers.
Exactly.
But now they don't make the loafers anymore. So we really don't have any kind of a need for the penny.
I see.
I feel like with pennies, though, now if you find one, you better pick it up and you will have good luck. It's going to be a much more rare occurrence.
There you go. Maybe, exactly. Oh. I have a ton of them in a big old canister at my house, so I'll get rich on those. Brett and Brown Deer listening on WAUK says, I don't do superstitions, but I have OCD, so I've got a bunch of rituals I must do for no particular reason. It's not easy being me. Okay.
So Brett sounds like he's one of those guys that will like walk around his house before he can leave. I got my keys. Mm-hmm. You ever do that? Like when you're feeling scatterbrained, you kind of just make laps around your house. Oh, I got to do that. Sometimes it's tough to leave.
Pete, I have been halfway to where I need to be and I turn around and drive back because I think, oh, I left the back patio open. The dog's going to get out. Oh, I left the oven on or the stove on. I have made those trips and I don't live close to almost anything around here. So for me, like, I have to make sure that I've, like, all right, the doors are closed, the lights are on, the things are armed, blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay, now I can leave. And then
now
I'm like,
I
then I forget my keys.
Yeah, then you forget your keys. But it's worse when you leave, like what you just said, when you get halfway there. And I've done that too, especially when I'm going out of town and I'm like a mile out of town on the highway and I got to go back. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep.
So we've got, where are we at here? Oh, Nick from Marshall says, the only superstition I have is Stevie Wonder.
That's what I said, too.
Superstitious guy, yeah. Let's get to our, we've got some text here on social media, and you did say that, Greg. You said Stevie Wonder's hit song, Superstition. That's it.
Yep.
So you have none.
None.
You don't, like, see, I on social media, I put, I won't walk under a ladder, but not really because I think anything terrible is going to happen, but I'm like, why would I risk it at all if I can just walk around?
Well, to me, I don't see it as a, I don't see it as a bad luck, good luck thing for me. I see a ladder. I'm too tall to walk under it, so it makes no sense in the first place. So I would never do that, and I would never, I do not think I have a single superstition because I just do not believe in those things at all. I know I'm ruining the party fun for everyone, but to me, like, oh, there's a black cat. Oh, there's a ladder. Oh, you broke a mirror. Oh, there's a crack. There's a, it's like, it's, those are all things that just happen. I've been no fun, Charlie.
I've sped once to get around a black cat, and I ended up driving into a parked car.
All right.
That sounds like user error to me.
Yeah, I'm just a bad driver. Tim Baker on social media says, knock on wood. That's one I do sometimes when I think of it.
Yeah.
Just to do? I don't know. I don't think terrible things are going to happen, though.
I have said knock on wood just because it's a ubiquitous statement in the world. Like, you just say, knock on wood. Or, like, you know, I mean, to a certain extent, like, you know, like, oh, my goodness, or my God. Like, you know, like, you use some of these words because it's just in this, it's what the words we use. I do like what the English say. They don't say knock on wood. They just say touch wood. They want some good luck.
Okay.
Touch wood. Yeah, I like that.
There are
that.
More That's gentle it. People.
Yeah. Us, we're like, beat wood up.
Honestly, I do feel like that. We have to have to extreme everything or macho-ize everything.
Yeah. You know? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So. That's 100% true. What are, okay, so what superstitions do you hold other than avoiding possible superstitions, like the ladder example?
You know, it's weird. Like I'll knock on wood too. Sometimes if I catch myself a crack on a sidewalk, I'll step over it because I think stepping a crack, the whole, that whole thing. But I don't do it like, it's not like I seek this stuff out. It's just if it comes in, it's like, well, you know, or the breaking a mirror thing is supposed to bring 7 years of bad luck. Mm-hmm. And I see people in movies, like when there's a fight on screen and some guy goes into a mirror, I'm like, now will the actor get the bad luck or the writer? You know, like I do think of those things. Like if someone were to, if God was dispersing bad luck for superstitious reasons, what would happen? I don't know. What do you think about this, Somers?
You know, that's an interesting take. And now I think I'm going to think about that whenever I'm watching a movie and a mirror breaks. You know, is it the actor? Is it just the character? Are there enough layers of fiction that it doesn't count?
Right.
But yeah, I think I'm kind of with Greg where I don't do any of these things because I'm afraid of negative consequences. I do them because they are so ingrained in culture of humanity.
Yes.
Or because they're stupid. Like, why would I need to open an umbrella indoors? Or I am also tall. Walking under an umbrella is very inconvenient. Or walking under a ladder.
Yes.
Correct.
Wait,
and
so
if I do it accidentally, I'm not going to go, oh, bad luck. I just don't even think about it and I keep walking. But like preemptively, I'll do it, I guess, from time to time.
Opening an umbrella indoors is bad luck, correct?
Yeah.
Considered. Yes. Today is March the 13th, Friday the 13th. Today is National Open an Umbrella Indoors Day. Why would you have a day which promotes the idea of bad luck? I don't get it. On the most, what's considered the most unlucky day of the year, which is Friday the 13th, is a whole other barrage of hate I get on social media when I make fun of that too.
It does seem foolish. If you're going with the whole like Pascal's wager idea that Pete's talking to, like in case it's true, let's abide by it. This seems idiotic.
Yes. It just seems very odd. National Walk Past a Black Cat Day. I'm sure that's probably somewhere. I will bet money that's a day. So.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just allergic to cats, so I try to avoid them. But not a superstition thing. Amanda Nimmer, our social media guru here, one of them at Civic Media, says, if my ears are ringing, it means someone's talking crap about me. If it's the left one, at least. Wow, she's really broken that down.
Wow, that's very specific.
Very specific. Eric Rathsack, one of my favorite singers from Green Bay, he's been on Nightlight before, says, don't step on the foul line playing baseball when playing the field. Now, Greg, you're probably familiar with that one. Some of those pitchers get their routines down, right?
Oh, I mean, baseball, sports, people in sports are some of the most superstitious humans ever. Stories of like, oh, we're in the playoffs, I don't wash my socks at all. Gross. Or like what, like they have to, like, I mean, just watching a player walk up to the batting box and see them their routine every time, like they swing the bat, if they miss, they have to bat again. They do the exact same thing because it's the same motion. I always think of, of Christian Yelich or Ryan Braun. They're like, they bring the bat up, they hold it up, and then they bring it back and they go, you know, there is processes I understand within that. I want to say it's ridiculous, but I'm not going to tell them that to their faces because I like the, the baseball players I like. But yeah, I just, that sports people, athletes have some of the most ingrained, deeply held, unbreakable superstitions because they feel like if anything goes wrong, it's because of, oh, I did not look at the wall for 40 seconds. We lost. It's my fault.
And they do. There are those guys too that step out of the batter's box and they'll do each wristband once and then they'll put their hat. And then that drives me bananas because you're kind of watching someone else have OCD. We all have our tendencies, but watching someone else do it between every pitch is kind of maddening. Stacy Sue on social media says, don't open an umbrella inside. Another vote for that one. Michael on social media says, superstition, fear, and jealousy all walked into a bar. A few minutes later, fear became jealous, and superstition got in the way of having a good time. So the guy went back home.
Well,
I'm going to have to read that one again after the show. Thank you, Michael. Daniel says, I avoid cracks on the sidewalks, but for other reasons. He doesn't want to get swallowed up, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I don't step on cracks on the sidewalk sometimes just because if the sidewalk is unlevel, I don't want to like it. Because knowing me, I know me very well. And I know that even like a half inch like differential between the concrete is me just spilling onto the ground and somehow hurting myself. So I will avoid cracks in the sidewalk, but for real purposes.
I was in Madison about probably 4 years ago. My daughter came with me one of my trips down there. I'm carrying two either milkshakes or smoothies, whatever they were, and I was right out in front of Ian's Pizza next to Dottie Dumpling's Dowry, and I took the sidewalk up and I fell. Mm-hmm. I did not hit my head. I did not use my hands. I maintained the beverages in my hand, did not spill them, and I did a graceful fall. It was probably the greatest athletic moment of my life, sadly, and it worked out well. So, but for that reason, I won't step on a crack on a sidewalk.
All right. Yeah. Barb in Waukesha listening on WAUK says, I cross my fingers for good luck. But doesn't also crossing your fingers mean you're lying? Like, see, it just
that's
doesn't.
Double crossies.
It doesn't make sense, people.
Well, it depends. Here's the thing. Are you like, oh, I hope we get it? Or are you crossing your fingers behind your back while you're extending your other hand?
Right.
You know? It's all based on context.
Okay, I get you're right. I'm sorry. I am misconstruing the nuance of crossing your fingers. All right. Don't stop sending us your messages. Don't stop telling us what superstitions you believe in. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can leave that comment on the live stream. Let's see here. We can. We have Adam Bradley coming up next. He's a best-selling author, professor of English and African-American Studies at UCLA. We'll be talking about art, music, pop music, all those great things coming up next here on Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network. Stay tuned. Stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe. Sitting across the stage from me is Mr. Greg Bach. Our next guest is a best-selling author, a professor of English and African-American Studies at UCLA, and the founding director of Rap Lab. His books include The Poetry of Pop and The Anthology of Rap. It is our pleasure to welcome to Nightlight Mr. Adam Bradley. Adam, welcome.
Oh, it's good to be with you guys.
I could have that intro, by the way, could have been like 3 minutes long after I looked at all the stuff you've done. Quite accomplished, and it's great to have you here. I have so many questions for you. But
let's start kind of small, and maybe it's not small. How do you get to a point in your life where you get to teach pop music? That seems like an absolute blast.
Well, I don't think I would have been able to get here without generations of folks who would be in the back of the classroom, you know, with headphones on, listening to music when they weren't supposed to. There had to be that foundation of people who were bringing popular music and rock and rap into classrooms before a teacher could actually do it. And it's been a really wonderful experience to grow up with this music surrounding me and be able to share it with students and to be able to keep my ears young, even as the rest of me grows old, by listening to the music my students listen to.
You know, I'm of the generation, I don't know what it's like without hip hop and rap and that kind of culture in my life. And I feel like we've spent a long time looking at the lyrics of pop and rock music as poetry. But do you still find people who push back maybe at hip hop and rap and say, well, it's not, it's just them talking? Do you still have that old school idea in your face from time to time? Or have people kind of turned the corner and said, no, this is a viable art form with poets and storytellers?
That's a great question, because you're exactly right. I mean, ever since Bob Dylan debuted, people were calling him a poet. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take the Nobel Prize to recognize him as a poet. There were people writing entire books about Dylan as the bard of the generation in the 60s and 70s. So I think you're right that the resistance that rap music faced had a lot to do, as so many things do in this country, with demographic matters, with race and identity and class and all those things. Maybe even more important, though, it had to do with the way that rap presents itself as beat-driven, mm-hmm. as sonic, rather than language-driven, even though the language is just so rich in rap. There are just so many more words. I mean, mm-hmm. look at a Beatles song, you know, love, love me do, you know I love you, mm-hmm. I'll always be true. Yeah, and you compare that to, I don't know, Slick Rick or Chuck D or Eminem or a Kendrick Lamar tune, and they're literally just, by an order of magnitude, more words. Mm-hmm. And the words are often doing things in terms of storytelling, as you mentioned, Greg, and in terms of just rhythm, rhyme, and figurative language that pop music didn't always allow for, just in the space of the bars themselves.
That's a great answer. I, you know, like I said before we started this interview, I was kind of late to the party with rap, and I still think it's misunderstood. Like, I get it now. I listen to it, and like you just made reference to, Adam, you, in my case, my kids kind of keep me current, you know, because it's easy to fall into your old, well, these are the musicians I like, and I have all I need for the rest of my life, when you're really cheating yourself out of some great music. But I remember you mentioned Kendrick, or maybe Greg did, that Super Bowl halftime show last year. Greg and mm-hmm. I have a mutual friend who we all went to social media to find out what the reaction was going to be from those of our friends who we know weren't going to like it maybe. And this comedian, fellow comedian, said his Facebook post was just, no one cares that you didn't like that. So that made me laugh hysterically. But then, you know, my son was kind of telling me what the story was and everything, and it was brilliant. Is it just a lack of knowledge or information? Would more people respond to rap if they understood it better or took a little time to research it?
Well, you know, I think two things are going on there. One is there are so many people that respond to rap that it, over the course of the last 25 years, has become the dominant voice of youth culture, has become one of the top-selling Billboard genres, and to this day as well, really is the most streamed musical genre in the whole world. So wow. Whether you're going to Poland or Russia, or if you're going to Brazil or to Topeka, Kansas, or Chicago, Illinois, or wherever you want to go, it tends to be there. Now, another thing is happening, though, which is that because so many of us grew up with hip hop always being there, now that it's over 50 years old, it's become part of the language of pretty much any genre of music that you choose, whether it's country, whether it's any form of pop, electronic music, whether it's soul and R&B, certainly at this point, they often fuse elements of hip hop, whether it's the beat-driven element of it, whether it's the speaking rather than singing, or something closer to speech than song, in the nature of the vocal delivery. All of that is at play. So I think there may be people who still say, oh, I can't sand rap. And yet they'll also be listening to a song, whether it's a Dierks Bentley tune or a Billie Eilish song, where there are elements that nonetheless have their origin in some quality of hip hop music.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think about this topic all the time. To me, as a fan of both hip hop and country, I see them as two sides of the same coin. Uniquely American experiences spoken through song that connect with people across a lot of different barriers. And when I hear people criticize, you know, they'll criticize Beyonce's Cowboy Carter album, is like, well, that's not real country. And I'm like, well, you listen to Morgan Wallen, who has hip hop drums on his.
Right.
Like, so where is the difference here for you? Where is the breaking point? Because to me, when I listen to country, I can hear the same thing in hip hop. I'm hearing individuals, and they don't even have to have experienced the experience or the story. They are telling the story correctly that connects us. And it's funny to me that people who are younger than me can still see those divides as the reasons why they can't like these musics. Whereas I think they almost enhance each other, because they're so connected through their history.
Yeah. Well, as a proud Gen Xer, I went to college in the 90s, in which the thing that one would often hear is that I like everything but country and rap.
We'll have more with our guest, the author of The Poetry of Pop and UCLA professor, Mr. Adam Bradley. After the news, we're coming right back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. Welcome back to Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe. Sitting across the stage from me is Mr. Greg Bach. Our guest is Adam Bradley. He is a best-selling author and professor of English and African American Studies at UCLA. He joins us here today to talk about several of his books and pop music in general, and it's great to have him.
It seems like to me that, you know, the two biggest examples of, I want to say, not genre bending, but just going into other genres would be a Cowboy Carter and Post Malone's last record too. And I feel like that is nothing new. We have seen artists over the decades take dips into other genres, but now it almost feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, when they do it, that comes with a $20 to $30 million advertisement machine behind them saying, look who's done this. Whereas, you know, David Bowie's a great example. The man made like two records of the same style and then moved onto something every time. And we just said, that's new David Bowie. That's a new style. We like it. We don't like it. But now when you do it, it almost feels like you have to announce it. There has to be a major media push. And then, as you just said, comes the constant bombardment of criticism from people who say, not my music, you won't have. I feel like that's almost new too, because am I wrong in that?
I think you're right. Certainly when you look at something like Cowboy Carter, which is a cultural moment that Beyonce and her team and amazing collaborators constructed in a sense, mm-hmm. which, and her label and everything, to say, hey, this is a moment when we're going to do something almost like a cultural conservation. And for her, she's very invested in the history of Black music and American music more broadly. And to mm-hmm. tell that story in song means consciously drawing from old forms, bringing in artists, you know, getting Dolly Parton to hop on a song. I mean, things like this are I think, a really calculated move to claim this cultural space and to say, hey, we need to acknowledge the tradition and move it forward into our present. And that's the trick, though. Like, how do you make music that's sparkling and alive and fresh and yet also so backward looking as well? And this is something, for instance, that we've grappled with as a nation with jazz. You know, jazz mm-hmm. music, if you think about, you know, I ask most people what their favorite jazz artists are. If they have them, they're going to mention people who were big in the 60s. They're going to mention Miles Davis, John Coltrane, you know, Bill Evans, whomever. They're going to name this cohort of artists who at the time were doing really avant-garde work. And yet, of course, we've had multiple generations since of folks who are extending the tradition, but often doing it with this reverential sense of, we need to preserve the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Miles Davis, for his part, didn't want any part of that. In the 80s, he basically said, "Jazz is dead, finito." He's gone. And he was pointing directly at Winston Marsalis, who is the greatest conservative small C when it comes to music. He wants to make sure that this music isn't lost. And we owe him a great debt. And yet I think Miles and others would say, you got to make new stuff. You got to challenge, you got to break conventions. So there's that balance. I think Beyonce is a fascinating figure in that guard of someone who at once is doing the Wynton Marsalis type conservation work for Black American music and other forms of American music. And yet also has a little bit of Miles Davis in her, where she's breaking some boundaries along the way as well.
That is fascinating. Speaking of jazz, this is a good segue into my next question. You're the author of 7 books, if the internet doesn't lie to me. And I always, as a writer myself, jazz is the only thing I could write to because you can't really follow it. So especially new jazz, like if you just put on K-jazz, you know, you get new stuff too. What do you, when you write, what is your process? Do you write every day for a certain amount of time when the mood catches you? And do you listen to music when you write?
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing that I've kind of, it's project dependent, I guess. I've written one entire book that isn't among those 7, actually, that hasn't been published, nor will it likely be. That's another story.
Oh, no.
I've written one entirely to J. Dilla's Donuts, which is an instrumental hip hop album.
Oh my God. Keep going.
And I mean, literally almost wrote the entire book to that. I just put it on repeat and it became so familiar that it didn't throw me out of my own flow and my own music that I try to write when it comes to the words themselves. You know, and I think writers, we at our best can have a small music in our words alone. And so I often try not to compete with that. So another thing I do is I'll put these headphones on, or whatever headphones are close, I'll put them on noise canceling. I'll go to a public place. I won't have music on at all. It'll just be the kind of the din of conversation around me and the social atmosphere of knowing I'm around people doing this solitary activity. And that to me is maybe the most effective soundtrack to the writing I do is more that than any song.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah. For myself, silence is so silence in a public place is difficult. I'm a big fan of noise canceling on the headphones and listening to nothing. But back in college, my professor just handed me a drum and bass album. He goes, "Try to study to this." And it was the perfect key because there was barely any words. The beat was so solid and I wasn't trying to play the instruments in my head or try to sing the lyrics. So it was allowing itself to make a noise pattern that kept me in my place of writing or studying. It was to this day, years later, I still will throw on drum and bass in headphones if I need to hunker down and get something done, because that is the way I can get my brain to stop, like in the background saying like, yeah, you know, you should do later. You should go in the garage and fix the thing, blah, blah. No, it's like, it allows me to concentrate. But
I'm trying that tonight, by the way.
I was like, I'm not kidding you. Go on YouTube, write in drum and bass, no vocals. There's a 6-hour clip that I listen to almost every week and it's perfect. We've been talking about hip hop music. We've been talking about country music. I think two genres, I believe a lot of people understand the art within, and therefore the people who say, well, that's not real music or whatever, they're kind of the fogey boomers, whatever, that's fine. But when it comes to pop music, Adam, if you're at a cocktail party or you're at a bar and you talk about your job and someone says, oh, I love Kendrick and I love Johnny Cash, but pop music, man, has nothing today. It's so boring and bland. What does that do for your brain when you hear someone say that?
Well, the first thing I do is I channel the great Nick Hornby, who said basically that pop is anything but opera. I mean, he has such a broad definition of pop, and it's one that I share. And the reason I share it is that these kinds of distinctions of genre, and certainly something like pop that's so capacious, were things that were imposed upon the music from outside. They were by, you know, record companies or radio programmers or other kinds of things to think about how to deliver a product, not so much about the music itself. So part of what I would do is destabilize that term pop and to open it up The other thing I would do, though, is because I also understand what people mean when they say that. They're thinking of Taylor Swift or Sabrina Carpenter or any number of artists who are hard to define outside of that category that aren't clearly R&B or soul or aren't clearly country or rap, then you know that pop kind of makes sense. When it comes to that, I then say, well, there's a high art in seeming artless and coming across as effortless.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to do because, you know, like most of us aren't so good that we can have things be so seamless. And so if something achieves pop music success, most likely it's pretty well crafted in one form or fashion. Now that craft may not show itself most clearly in the lyrics. Sometimes it does, sometimes not. But it will show itself. There are very few works of music that have made it onto the Billboard charts that are just absolute trash. I mean, there's something that's crafted effectively that's working. And it may not be to your taste. It may not be something that will stand the test of time. But there's a craft to it that's worth analyzing. And that's what I've spent a lot of my career doing.
Of your books, which one are you the most proud of and which one was the most challenging? We talked a little before the show about the poetry of pop. You've also written a book about Ralph Ellison and Common. Which of these books, if someone wanted to read one of your books, where would you have them start?
Well, I given the book that I think most people who've read my work have read, let's put it that way, which is a book that I published very early called Book of Rhymes, The Poetics of Hip Hop. And I'm proud of that because it was so hard to get that published. I was a kid finishing his doctorate in English at Harvard University and started my career as a professor and was doing the dutiful thing that we professors are supposed to do, which is to take your scholarly manuscript and get it published by a university press. And I sent the early version of Book of Rhymes out to all of the major publishers of academic manuscripts, and they all rejected it. Until finally, one of my students who knew the work that I was doing said, hey, I'm interning at this literary agency in New York, and have you ever thought about maybe doing a book with a trade publisher? I sent it to an agent there, and this is still my agent today. He read it and he said, I can sell it.
Nice.
I can sell it in a matter of months. And he did. And you know what? You forget the kind of narrow academia thing. I wanted to write to that audience because I wanted to write about a music in a way that the people who actually liked the music could read. So I'm really proud of having taken that leap of faith on myself in that early point of my career to break with the tradition of what you're supposed to do and write to a general audience really early on. And I'm so glad that I did, and it shaped the work that I've done ever since.
You mentioned that you are a Gen Xer. I am a Gen Xer. I believe Pete is also a Gen Xer. We got three of us here. And okay, I wasn't going to say it. it's my favorite Vin Diesel movie. I was going to say that, I think we know what we'd want to hear in a classroom. We know what we'd want to teach in a classroom. We know what we'd want to talk about for hours when it comes to music. But you're in classrooms with young people. What do you hear? And I imagine that your profession, what you do in your job, listening to young people is as important as it is what you teach them because, you know, it's easy to get buried in the music you love. And there's just so much out there. What are you talking about when you're talking to these young people? And what do you hear from them as far as their excitement about the newer music, but like what they're listening to that might spark your interest as well, that keeps you young at heart in your love for music as an art form?
Yeah. Well, that begins at home as well with my two daughters who are 12 and 15. And I recently went to a SD Kid concert, who's a UK rapper whose debut this past, well, really kind of bubbled up to the public consciousness just last year. And you know, being in this space with a bunch of people who are a third my age, mosh pit, you know, all this crazy stuff going on, and thinking that, you know, that was me maybe 30 years ago. It's good to put yourself in those uncomfortable positions mm-hmm. to keep yourself engaged. And of course I was 20 feet away. I had to be 20 feet away from my daughter at all times, she said. But I was in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, this was really fun, Adam. It's been great getting to know you and learning about what you know. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope you'll come back. And I'm sure this is one of those topics we could make this a mini series. You know, if you've got mm-hmm. the time one day, it would be fun to do that. So anytime, buddy. This is really fun. Thank you.
Yeah,
this is great. Just keep on rocking and keep send those playlists around too, so I keep my ears attuned to what y'all are.
It's
a pleasure, guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Adam. You have yourself a wonderful day. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
See you.
Take it easy.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. My name is Greg Bach, coming to you live from Radio Park here in Racine, all the way across the state in holiday Christmas parkland of fun townness 2025 in Marinette, Wisconsin is Pete Schwabe. In Madison, we have Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. You can be part of the conversation, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. We are streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform. We still call Twitter, still taking your comments on what is your superstition that you hold fast and dear to your heart. Just got done talking to Adam Bradley. Thank you so much, Adam Bradley, for stopping by and giving us a great conversation about pop music, music in general. Jack from Merrimack is on the line right now, also wants to chime in on the topic. Jack, good evening. How are you doing?
Oh, just peachy keen so far. sort of waiting with bated breath until later tonight, but that's to come.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm an old jazz musician. I'm on the board at Madison Jazz Society. At 80, I still get the occasional vocal gig. I really like that genre of music. But having said that, there are some marvelous modern musicians. I'm thinking of people like John Legend. I first encountered him when I was looking for a standard called All of Me. Well, he wrote another song by that name, and it is marvelous if you haven't heard it.
Put it on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has lyrics like, all of me loves all of you, all your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. I mean, that's a turn of phrase that Cole Porter could have used. Extremely well done. There are others. There's Bruno Mars. There's Ed Sheeran. I mean, there are some fabulous pop musicians and pop songs that have come out. It's not all bubblegum, and that's got a place too, because mm-hmm. as he pointed out, it's an easy to enjoy and easy to go along with the flow music. But some of these more complex songs are just wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jack, for calling in. We appreciate you. Yeah, absolutely.
And Jack, John Legend was on Nightlight about a year and a half ago. So we'll break out part of that interview. He was really cool to talk to. Just a great
guy. I can
imagine.
He seems like a really nice guy. Thanks as always, Jack, for getting in touch with us. Pete, do we have any last minute messages on the social media?
Yeah, we got Vince on social media who says, "I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious." It was Michael Scott. That's where I heard that from the office.
Boom!
Love it.
And then I get Little Irv on the live stream says, "I am a wood knocker." There you go. I'm going to say nothing more beyond that.
You don't really have to.
There you go.
And Sydney Politics, I just wanted to say, he said earlier, nice upgrade on the camera angle, Pete. I wanted to thank you for that and say Happy New Year, Sydney. So thank you for chiming in and listening as always, my friend.
Do not forget, next week on Monday, we'll be talking to Dr. Keith Paulson from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He'll be joining us to discuss the latest on the bird flu situation. Bird flu is back affecting here in Wisconsin. I don't know if it's going to affect egg prices at this point, but we will talk to Dr. Polson more about that. Hey, that's what happened last time. So, and then, of course, in the second hour, I cannot wait to have her on the show, comedian Mary Mack. She is absolutely amazing. One of the coolest things about Mary Mack, not just her comedy, her pure talent, she performed on the Grand Ole Opry. To me, that is automatic, like, pass into cooldom that I just, absolutely, my goodness. Oh, goodness gravy.
She's great, and she has one of the most unique personas, I think, of a comedian. And I'm so impressed with her when she's been on the show. She doesn't deviate from it. She commits to that character. And you know what? And I don't know her off stage, Greg, like you do. That might be her. But like, she's so good at it and so funny. Like, she's gotten three jokes by you before you know it because you're paying attention to her voice. It's like, oh my God, that was really funny. She's great.
I would say I've known Mary for quite a few years now, and I would say that 75% of what you hear on stage is real. Like she's that voice is real. That she is very she's just who she is, and it's awesome. And her husband Tim Harmston is an amazing stand-up comedian as well, and I love them both dearly. So that's going to be on Monday for Nightlight. I'm very much looking forward to that show. Pete, end of week three. I mean, I feel like we've done some good work here. We've had some good conversations. We're hanging out. You're hanging out in Christmaslandia, 2025, Marionette, Wisconsin. Ooh.
I like that. Yeah. We've got, we'll see. Chris, listen, there's a lot going on in Christmas City, USA here this weekend. We've got Jason Sheff here in town tomorrow, weather permitting, I assume.
That's right.
I'm very excited to introduce him and bring him on stage. So I don't know if there are tickets left, but it's at the Marionette Community Rec Center. Folks, check it out if you're in the Marionette area or don't mind a road trip. I hope the show still happens. We've got Oscars on Sunday night. Can't wait for that. Love the Oscars. We've got the NCAA tournament selections will be made Sunday night. There is a lot going on this weekend. There's some good movies in theaters. It's going to be a great weekend.
And this is a reminder that our conversation with Adam Bradley, as well as our conversation with Jason Sheff, are available on the YouTube page of Civic Media, the entirety, the full conversation. So what you've heard is so far like about 20, 21 minutes. These conversations are 45 minutes, 50 minutes long, so there's a lot more we're getting into. So if you go to Civic Media's YouTube page, you can listen to the entire thing. In fact, I think you can watch them now, too. We're putting the video on there as well, but that's a great place to go. You can always catch up with shows by going to civicmedia.us/shows. Find Nightlight, download episodes, listen to them whenever you would like because you can take them like a podcast. And then download the Civic Media app because next Monday begins the spring break into spring multi-state text to win contest, and you have to have the Civic Media app to participate. I'm telling you right now, you want to be part of this. Big prizes, big prizes. We'll tell you more about that on Monday.
And it's going to be fun. If you go and listen to the rest of the our interview with Adam, it was I love what he said about our music, Greg.
Exactly. Yeah, I felt very good.
It was fun. I thought he's going to tear me apart, but he didn't.
No, he doesn't judge. On behalf of Pete, I want to thank Aaron, Tucker, Traffic, Engineering. You are amazing. These microphones work because of you. Everyone who called, texted, and left a comment on the live stream, we appreciate you. Without you, there's no us. Coming up next, we got more programming here on Civic Media. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk to you on Monday, everyone. Have a great weekend. Sign them off, Pete.
Good night, Wisconsin.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.